Welcome to Veterinary Advice Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome back to Veterinary Advice Animal News and Views. Coming to you with my co-host from Illinois. Hello, Dr. Karen.
Who are you, Dr. Roger?
Oh, I know, I know. I haven't been too available lately.
Who is the man talking to me? I don't recognize him.
And I'm so sorry for standing you up last night, by the way.
Yeah, I'm a little bitter, audience, just so you know. And so in case there's any extra snide remarks, I was lit up last night. Just putting that out. Okay. It hurts. A little bit. Not gonna lie.
Yes, my apologies. I had dinner at mom and dad's house after a stressful day, and for some reason my mom always has this uncanny ability to like send me a text and invite me and the kids for dinner on a particularly stressful day. She just like can sense my son is stressed. I had like this afternoon of just all very mean people. none of them were polite. They're all grumpy, and I'm just like, ugh, it just sucks the life out of you. You know what I mean? When you have people like that, and I had a whole afternoon of it.
That's why I don't work in a clinic anymore, because I screen all and mine are always wonderful.
Smart. But so anywho, I end up having dinner with my parents and my kids, and my wife is, with our horse trainer, because she's, you know, training for, she's got a big show this weekend. So I'm like, I don't have to cook. This is perfect. And I got into such a good mood that I completely forgot about my responsibility last night. So
yes, and I'm on Skype. Yes. Oh no, I turned down. I had a person who wanted an appointment. I was like, no, I have to do a podcast.
I like the message. You suck, by the way.
Yes. Well, yeah. I was sending threats. It didn't help. So anyway,
I saw the threats. at any rate, here we are. Nice to be back with you. We're gonna start the episode actually with an email. We got mail today, and it's actually gonna kind of segue right into our topic. So.
Yeah, it's actually just, we were sitting here going, what have you blogged about? You know, and then we got this email and we're like, you know, this is an interesting topic that we wouldn't have thought of. And it's a good topic that I think a lot of people will be interested in. So here's the email. We'll build suspense.
Yes.
So, yes. It says, hey, docs, I stumbled across the Instagram account Wobble Nation last year, which is an account dedicated to raising awareness of pets with CH. CH is cerebellar hypoplasia, FYI. We'll go into that in detail. Anyway, I had never even heard of this condition in people, much less in animals. I've been following them ever since, but every so often they will allude to the fact that while they belong to the community of people who believe animals with CH can lead happy, fulfilling lives, there are others who do not think so and believe they should be euthanized. Have either of you had experience with CH in your practice, and what are your thoughts on whether animals with this condition can lead normal, quote, lives? I know you guys will give it to us straight. Thanks. And that's Lauren from South Carolina. So thank you, Lauren. And because this is actually a mildly controversial topic.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's really that controversial among veterinarians, but maybe among non-veterinarians it could be.
No, I've heard some banter about it. I think, you know, it sounds like you and I are generally, it sounds like, on the same page on this, but let's just get into the disease to begin with and what happens. The cerebellum is an area of the brain responsible for spatial orientation and balance. And these kittens develop, or let's say, have a lack of development of their cerebellum because their mother becomes infected with a parvovirus, causing a disease called panleukopenia. And we see parvo in dogs and cats. A lot of people don't realize that, Dr. Karen, because, you know, panleukopenia is part of that FBRCP vaccine, but they don't realize that there's a parvo vaccine in there, but because of the panleukopenia nomenclature. And I don't know how that happened. And we end up calling it feline distemper. You know,
well,
it's not distemper.
It doesn't help that we call it feline distemper. I'm like,
what?
So it's a parvovirus that we call feline panleukopenia and distemper. So let's get the same thing, three names, and then wonder why people are confused, you know?
Good point.
And dogs, it's parvo. And
parvo. That's right up.
Yeah. But cats are weird, so who knows?
Yeah. Whatever the case, panleukopenia is a parvovirus. Mom gets it while pregnant. And the interesting thing is this can affect some of the kittens, or none of the kittens, or one of the kittens. There's no rhyme or reason to it, right? There's you could have a completely normal litter of five kittens and one of them gets it, right?
Right.
it's just another cats are weird though, right? Like you said. So why don't you talk about the clinical signs and what happens to these cats when they come out?
Yeah. So when they come out, so
after they're done baking.
Yes. That's a good point though, because they can actually be born normal and then start to develop signs in the first couple weeks of life too. So, because apparently I believe if they have it, these changes can still go on once they're born. So, basically the cerebellum is this little part in the back of your brain. Like, it's actually really easy to see. If you ever look at those pictures of like a brain from the side, it's like the circle on the back. It's like the backpack on the brain. Okay.
Perfect.
It's like
the backpack. I like it. You are so good at putting things in easy, understandable.
That's definitely your gift. Carry things with it, you know. Sure. So
the backpack of the brain. Love it.
Yeah. Anyway, but and it controls fine motor skills. And so when your cerebellum is not functioning, but the rest of your brain is, you still have vision, you still have memory, taste, recognition, like hearing, all of the normal things that you associate with the brain, but you just can't control your movements very well. And so although you can see the food and you're hungry and you can taste the food, you can't maybe move your mouth very well the way you want it to get the food in your mouth. Mm-hmm. Walking is the obvious one because they tend to not walk well. There's different variations of it, obviously. And they tend to be generally tremory, like kind of like a person with Parkinson's, which totally different pathology because Parkinson's is about your Purkinje fibers, which has nothing to do with your cerebellum.
I just learned something.
Oh, there you go. It's a similar look, and they're this kind of wobbly, hence the name Wobble Nation. That's a great name for a group of cats with cerebellar hypoplasia. And I have a friend from vet school who had a cat with it, and he was named Bobbles.
Bobbles.
And it fit, and Bobbles lived a great life, actually. But he was, it's like he had his own beat going on in his head, you know, like his own rhythm. And he couldn't steer himself, and he would fall over a lot. But if you put the food bowl in front of him, he could eat. If you put him in the litter box, he would go. When you came home, he was happy to see you. And it's not a painful condition. It doesn't actually hurt at all. And if you can do the nursing care and they can function, they can be okay. So what experience have you had with it personally?
So I've had a couple of patients that had this, and their qualities of life were fine. Mm-hmm. I guess I haven't seen many of them, to be quite honest, but the one that sticks out most in my memory, do you remember the surgical specialist we had on talking about stem cells, Dr. Jeff Christensen?
Yeah.
Him and his wife, they're both vets. She's a general vet. He's a surgical specialist. Well, they adopted one of these cats, and his name was I think he still has him, Elvis. And Elvis was hilarious. You just see this like drunken cat walking around, but he was just so sweet and purring and loved on everybody. And then you know how the cats leaned into you with their, you know, rub their head and their tail on you. He'd be doing that, and in the midst of it, then would just kind of fall over, you know, and then just kind of paw at you. And he was a happy cat, and he ate, and he, you know, didn't always make it to the litter box. He dropped deuces every now and then, but Jeff didn't mind. And Elvis, God, he's got to be 13, 14 years old at this point.
Wow.
So, you know, from that perspective, I think it all really depends on severity. You know, if they literally can't ambulate, I've never seen one that severe personally, but again, I've only seen three, my friends and two patients of mine. What's your own experience?
Yeah, well, so I had one, at a vet clinic I worked at here that we did euthanize because the people wanted to try to help it, and it was the only one in the litter. The other ones were all, you know, totally normal. Mm-hmm. And he had a hard time like riding himself. He was always like laying on his side, and he couldn't get on his belly, and he just couldn't hold himself up at all. He couldn't really eat. And so they're trying to like syringe feed him. I'm like, guys, long term, you can't syringe feed a cat and they live long term. You know what I mean? You just, when they're a little kitten, it's good, but when they're big, you can't get enough water and calories into them to sustain life.
Sure.
And it's not fair to them. And so we actually recommended euthanasia, and they were like, no, no, no. And they tried for a couple weeks, and he wasn't growing. He wasn't thriving because he was just like laying there. He was peeing and pooping. You know, I mean, it was bad. So that cat, we ended up euthanizing, just because his quality of life was so terrible. He couldn't do the basic functions, and the people had hearts of gold, and they were trying to help him, and we were like, guys, he's miserable. You're miserable. Everyone's miserable. You know, there's no reason to keep this going. And eventually he wasn't going to live long term because we couldn't get enough nutrition in him, you know? So yeah. It was, and he might have had other stuff going on too, because it was such an odd case how he really just couldn't do anything but sit there and tremble, you know? It was almost like a seizure is what it looked like, but like a seizure that never ever stopped.
Yeah. Well, that case sounds to me like that's a no brainer. So I think it just comes down to the judgment.
No brainer. Get it. Pun intended.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Oh, that was horrible.
There I was being clever and didn't even know it. Thanks for pointing that out. I think it comes down to the judgment of the veterinarian and the willingness of the owner and their ability to do the husbandry. And, you know, as I said, this kid, Elvis, periodically missed the litter box, and, you know, my friend Jeff is okay with that. Well, what he did was he put the litter box out on his back porch and got made a little kitty door for him, which miraculously Elvis can get through. And he'd go out there and just kind of wobble his way over to the litter box. And it was out, you know, out in the patio. So, you know, whether he made it in or not, wasn't a tragedy, you know, because cat excrement can get pretty nasty, especially the pee.
But he could make it out of cat door. That's impressive.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Yeah. Elvis was a special one. I used to love watching him come down the steps. It would take him like 10 minutes. He'd be one step at a time and then two more. But he just didn't care. He's an orange tabby, you know, the Garfield of the world. And, always a cool party favor. So, you know, it just depends. That's the best answer we can give, right?
Yeah. And it depends on two things, the cat and the owner.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Severity. Because if you're an owner who is not willing to tolerate anything and cannot have any poop on your floor and cannot do any special accommodations, then these are not the cats for you, you know?
And, you know, I knew a person who had cerebellar damage, so I can kind of know how the cats feel a little bit. He was involved in an accident, and so he had issues with his cerebellum, and he looked entirely normal. If he could see everything, he was good, but if he went to, like, reach for something behind him, he would almost fall over, and he couldn't judge, like, you're looking at me right now, right? Let's say there's a wall behind me that's 2 feet away, and I'm going to, you know, I could kind of guesstimate where that is. Whereas this guy had no clue, you know, sometimes he felt it was like right up beside him. And other times it wasn't even close as he thought. It just no concept of the distance behind him, you know, which was really interesting. But
he didn't drive, did he?
What's that?
Did he drive? Because that sounds kind of terrifying if he did.
You know, I don't recall because I didn't know him very well. But I'd met him in passing. He ran – I want to say he did drive. I think he did drive.
If he has no depth perception, you know, that seems
he's got forward depth perception, and he's fine with stuff behind him as long as he's looking, right?
Okay.
But it's if he's not looking. So, yeah, I think he had an SUV is my recollection. I mean, we're going back like to 2007. So,
okay.
You know, but yeah, so I knew the guy, and so I kind of know how these kitties feel a little bit. But no, he wasn't. What was the name of the cat you talked about? Bobble.
Yes.
He wasn't like Bobble.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he could walk forward pretty well. And it's funny, in his previous life he was an orthopedic surgeon, and yeah, and he had to stop that, and he started a horse farm. So my wife was riding at his stable, and that's how I met him.
Oh, funny.
So anyway, anywho. So let's talk about panleukopenia virus. And have you treated feline cases?
I'm trying to think. You know, I think I've had a couple suspects, but no, it's not something I see. Oh, wait a minute. Flashback. Yes. Holy crap. When I was in New Jersey, I blocked this out. This is like 15 years ago. Ooh. But when I was in New Jersey, we used to help the local animal control. And they had an outbreak of Panleuk. And for like about 2 or 3 months, every kitten had it. It was maddening. People were mad because they would adopt these kittens and bring them in a couple days later. And I'm like, your kitten is dying.
Right.
And it's going to be, you know, here's this kitten they've had for 2 days. It's going to be a lot of money to try to fix it. And they're like, well, we need to think about this for a couple of days. I'm like, no, you don't even have a couple hours. You need to decide right now or this cat dies. I mean, people, it was horrible. I mean, I had a kitten literally die in my hand. They brought it in and I was examining it and I looked at it and he had diarrhea and just went right through in my hand. I'm like, well, okay. You know, I mean, it is such a horrible. So that, since I left New Jersey, I haven't really dealt with it much in cats. I might have had, I think I had a suspect at the Humane Society once, but nothing. I mean, that was awful. And parvo and dogs, there's a test for. Easy test. You grab some poop, put in the thing, you get a blue dot, you know. There really isn't a test, or at least back then, there wasn't really a test for Panluke that was specific. You know, you can do a blood test, and that will kind of hint enough to spell it out for you. But it wasn't like an easy, quick little test like the parvo test for dogs,
right?
Which made it, too.
Yeah, no, I haven't really seen a case in so long that of feline that I don't know what tests are available at this point in time, quite honestly. Maybe there is a stool test.
There might be one like the dog parvo, but we did CBCs in the first couple, and then once we knew what they were, you know what I mean? Like they're in animal control and they've got distemper or Panluke, same disease.
So it's funny because I haven't treated a case in a very long time as well. And when I took my first job in Long Island, we worked with this shelter called Little Shelter, and they primarily rescued felines. I saw it in kittens then occasionally. In fact, I have a recovered Panluke kitten from the shelter. Enrique, my cat, we got him in 2003. He came in with this batch of kittens that all had it. And my wife at the time was like, hey, actually, she was my fiance at the time, not yet my wife. She says, I really like to get a kitten. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, I got this whole batch of Panluke kittens that came in. If any of them survive, you can have it. So they all died but one. And that's Enrique. So he came home. He's all black, little fluff ball. And I'll tell you, he's a hardy cat. Obviously, he's the only one of seven that survived the scourge of parvo. So that was the main experience. So it was with that shelter in practice. Really, I don't, like you, I don't really see it. Although I do see plenty of canine parvo.
So are we not seeing it because these kittens are just dying out on the farm they're born on and never even get to a vet?
I think that and the vaccine is very, very effective. You know, it works great, just like it does in dogs.
If you give it.
Right. If you believe in vaccines.
But the vaccine is effective in dogs, yet we see dog parvo freaking all the live long day.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's – I don't know. It's interesting. But I don't know. But panleukopenia in cats, there is a – the distemper shot that your cat gets, that's what it's protect. That's one of the diseases it's protecting against is that. So it's a easy shot to get. It's recommended by every vet. So I don't know. I don't know why if they just don't make it to vets. You know what I mean? But also in the shelters I've worked with, I haven't heard of major Panluke outbreaks. Like you hear about parvo outbreaks in shelters with dogs.
All the time.
And you don't hear about Panluke outbreaks of cats. They always have herpes and they're always sneezing, you know, but they're not dying of parvo.
Yeah, it's almost an automatic they're going to get the sneezing herpes conjunctivitis disease. But yeah, it is interesting that it's not really coming across. I think probably because those kittens are just dying, you know, and they're not, you know, and they don't come across our exam room table. Whatever the case, it's, you know, it's a nasty disease. It is a virus that attacks two things. It attacks the intestinal apparatus and you get malabsorption diarrhea that always has that distinct parvo smell to it, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's the same with the felines and the dogs. It gets that fetid. It's so hallmark. It's like, oop, that's parvo poop. You just know it. But it also the other problem though with the disease is that it actually attacks the immune apparatus. It attacks the bone marrow, and so the very cells you need to mount an immune response, the white blood cells, are getting suppressed. But also at the same time, on top of everything else, the bone marrow also is responsible for the synthesis of red blood cells. So they get anemic as heck, too, because the body can't make enough red blood cells. So it's a perfect storm of terrible. Plus, they're hemorrhaging and bleeding out their butts. So that contributes to hemorrhage. It's a no bueno disease, folks.
Yeah, and then they get septic because of basically all the normal bacteria in their intestines translocates or goes into their bloodstream where there's no cells to meet them to fight it off. So, and that's how they die. That and dehydration are basically what kills them.
Dr. Lewis, please explain to me what septic means.
Oh yeah, how bad of me. So
mislay terminology.
Yeah, so sepsis is basically when you have a bacterial infection in your blood. Like, you can have a bacterial infection on your thumb and you'll be okay. But when you have bacteria in your blood, that is defined as sepsis. And that is a big bad thing. You got a fever, you have multiple organs shut down, because think about it, your blood is going to every organ. And so now your blood is delivering bacteria equally to every organ, just because it's nice. So, so now we have every organ being infected, and it's bad. So whenever you have a septic animal for any reason, it's a rough prognosis. And we also, and also realize these kittens, they're usually like, what, 2 or 3 pounds?
Can't put a catheter in them.
I mean, there's like nothing to them. They don't have any reserves. They don't have any body fat or anything like that to even work with. I mean, it's just, it's a perfect storm. But
yet Enrique survived it.
It's, yeah, that,
boy.
And
my boy.
And it's funny because the ones, and I tell this about dogs with parvo too, but every Panloo or parvo, dog or cat, excuse me, I've learned to tell people, okay, from my experience, more with the dog than the cat, but it is in the cards right now if this animal lives or dies. You can go to the specialist and have 5 blood transfusions and spend 10 grand, mm-hmm. and he might die. You can go home with a couple of antibiotics to give him some sub-Q fluids, and you give fluids to a turkey baster, and he might live. And I have had both happen,
sure.
in spite of everything we do. So basically, if his body is going to meet us halfway, it'll give him better odds the more you do. But I've seen it go. It doesn't. You're not guaranteed if you go to the specialist and spend 5 grand, your dog's going to live, or your cat's going to live. You know. And I have people who truly don't have 2 cents to rub together, and we do these at-home treatments, and they come in looking amazing. And I'm like, how is this possible when I just lost a dog after his 3rd transfusion at the emergency clinic, you know? So it's a very impossible to predict disease. And don't get mad at your vet because if they can't predict it, because I tell them, don't even ask me. Do not ask me, because I don't know if it's going to live or die.
Flip of a coin. It really is.
Flip a coin, and that'll tell you that the coin knows more than I do.
So I have an incredible case story. But before we transition to dogs, just want to bring up our sponsor real quick. We've had our last several episodes sponsored, including this one, by Ecosia.com. Ecosia.com is a search engine like Google, and Google, as you know, makes their money through advertising. They run ads, but Ecosia does as well, but they don't keep all the profits. They actually donate a big portion of their profits to, I believe it's 80-something plus percent of their profits get donated to actually planting trees. So their goal is to reach 20 billion trees to plant. And I'm going to just go to their website real quick so they see what they're up to at this point. We are up to 25,800,495, 96, 97, 98, right? So it's counting quickly. They want to plant 20 billion trees, and they're focusing on areas that have been decimated, where tree life has been pretty much vanquished. So, great thing to support. It's ecosia.com, ecosia.com. And I've been using them like crazy, by the way, because I want to support that. I'm a tree hugger. So, Dr. Karen, let's talk about dogs.
Oh boy.
So in dogs, we actually call it parvo, right? Because it's caused by a parvo virus. Imagine that.
And we see it in dogs. When I was at the Humane Society, I mean, we were in a very low income area where people didn't vaccinate, couldn't afford to vaccinate. I don't know. And I'd get a parvo a day sometimes. I mean, and a lot of them ended up putting to sleep because they were, by the time they came to us, they were so bad off. People didn't have any money to treat. And we're talking, they need to go to a specialist and, you know, get 24-hour care at this point. You know, me giving them some fluid into their skin is just not going to cut it. So it was always like a 2-hour long appointment, which explained what parvo was because they'd never heard of it. And then explaining, like, just like you said, how it's the perfect storm where it affects the immune system that's supposed to be fighting it, and affects the intestines, and then blah, blah, blah. At dogs, it does not affect the brain. That's a cat-specific thing. It can affect dogs' hearts, oddly. They can get some heart defects that show up later in life. But so it's a very – and the thing is, it's so preventable. Like, if you can't afford to go to the vet – I know you're going to kill me for saying this after Roger, but you know what? Go to one of those chat wagons and just – get a parvo vaccine if that's all you can afford, because by God, it sure beats having your dog die of a disease. You could have paid $10 for a vaccine somewhere. You know, I mean, just get it.
I'm not mad at you for saying that. I mean, if that's all you can afford, then do it. You know, my problem is the shot wagons themselves that try to pass themselves off as legitimate veterinarians.
Yeah.
You know, my problem's not the people that go there, you know.
I was kind of forced to do a couple low-cost vaccine clinics many, many, many moons ago when I was young and naive. And I have news. The people who go to those, they love their dogs. And if it weren't for that, they would get no care.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't like we were not taking business away from the local vets. It was us or nothing. And they would pay us in quarters. I mean, you know, and that was what they saved. And I was like, I am so thrilled that you are here and I'm vaccinating your dog because you live in a very parvo heavy area. And this is literally keeping your dog alive, you know? So, it's reality. Not everybody can, you know, not everybody can only work one job and make ends meet. So
that's yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, if go get the shot, you know, they're, you don't even need to see a veterinarian in Florida. As long as there's one in the building, anybody can give it the shot. It's a legal loophole. So you can literally get, you know, three vaccines for $20, you know, no problem. You don't need an exam, nothing. Just walk in, get your vaccines, and at least, you know you're protecting your dog. But real quick, the, cause it's one of their main means of income. This one particular, it's actually a chain that's here. They haven't done any of the new protocols, you know, like parvo, we do it every 3 years,
mm-hmm.
right? In the DHPP, all the research has shown you don't need to do it every year. Well, they're still doing it every year, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that annoys me.
But that does drive me crazy. And that is a great segue for the point I was going to make.
Sure.
See, now I'm even pointing. I'm so mad.
Oh, like, yeah, I see that.
That's when you know it's real. So parvo is a puppy virus that they get. Even when they're vaccinated, puppies can still get it because they don't have full immunity until they're about 16 weeks old. And so you get these like 8-week, 10-week old puppies. The owner's like, he got a shot 2 weeks ago. How does he still have parvo? So it's an effective vaccine, but it's not perfect for that age. That's the first thing I want to point out. You know, it's all the vaccine too. You can be doing everything right and they might still get it. That's just because it takes multiple shots for their immunity to fully work. That said, if you have a 10, 12 year old dog that is having diarrhea and has been vaccinated, even when he was vaccinated, like as a 2 or 3 year old, that's not parvo. My pet peeve is having these ancient dogs who are truly sick and people are like, let's give them more shots. I'm like, the last thing this dog needs is more vaccines. This dog needs blood work and fluids and like veterinary care, you know? Cause a lot of people are like, oh, I keep my dogs healthy. I give them shots every year. I'm like, your 12-year-old dog doesn't need a shot every year. He really doesn't, you know?
Yeah. And, so, and in fact, I get a lot of these cases where people come in with a sick dog and they're like, oh, while we're here, can he get his shots? You know, and I'm like, well, I'm like, I really am not a proponent of vaccinating sick dogs. So let's figure out what's wrong with your dog. And then you come back for the shots later. I got this wellness program where you can, it's a senior wellness program. You get a stool analysis and examination, a heartworm test and, general blood work, right? CBC chemistry T4,
mm-hmm.
all that for like $140, something like that. And if you opt in for that, then all the vaccines are free, right? You just, my main thrust is I want to examine the patient, parasite screen them. For the older patient, I'll run blood work. So these sick animals come in with diarrhea or whatever. I'm like, I'm not doing shots today. Let's run the senior wellness, and then when we get them all better, come in, we'll give you the free shots. You know, but these vets, you know, that are sticking sick animals with vaccines. I mean, do you remember getting vaccinated for rabies? How that felt?
I don't think it was very. It wasn't bad for me.
Oh, I felt horrible. Like so, I'd have three. Did you do the 3-shot protocol?
I remember two of them. I might have gotten. I thought it was just two. I'm trying to remember.
I had 3 for whatever reason, and I remember each time I felt, you know, crappier than the one before, and just for a day. But like you felt like you had like flu like symptoms, you know, and. So you want to do that to a sick animal, you know?
Make them sicker. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, and my thing is, because I actually, this sounds kind of counterintuitive, but I'm a house call vet, And so my prices are a little bit higher than going to a clinic because I'm kind of, you know, you're paying me to drive to your house. And yet I have a lot of people with financial limitations, but they, their friends love me or they heard about me and they heard my 5-star reviews or whatever and they want me. And they're actually on a really fixed income and they'll have me come out for shots and they'll be like, hey, I have X amount of money. And I'll be like, okay, look, I don't want to give your dog shots. I want to do a phenobarb level on your 8-year-old dog that's been on phenobarb for 3 years and never had its blood tested, you know? Sure. Let's not. And so I'm a proponent of, I mean, your dog's immunity is fine. Let's skip the shot. Maybe, you know, if your financial situation gets better, we'll do it then. But I am just like, let me do something that actually helps your dog instead of a shot he doesn't need because his immunity is fine.
Yeah.
You know, I am. And they're always shocked because for years and years, vets have been beating into their head, get your shots, get your shots, get your shots. And some people think I'm a quack because they're like, you don't want to give him shots? Well, what do you mean? I'm like, okay, if you can rock your world, I give him the stupid shot. But look.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big obsession with the shots, for sure. The magic shots.
Hey, one lady who I gave it to her for free just to shut her up. Right. Because she was so hell-bent that her dog would die if he did not get this stupid December shot he didn't need. And I needed, like, blood work on him. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Don't even pay me for the shot. Just shut up.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because we call the whole shot – we call it distemper because it's it's a whole other disease. But it's a 4-in-1 vaccine. So it's distemper, hepatitis, parvo, parainfluenza. And it's all, you know, so parvo is part of it, but we call it distemper, right? So
right.
It's one of those, I just don't want anybody confused.
Yeah, that's true. It is
there's so much out there. I mean, that we call feline parvo distemper. And anyway, I agree with you. Young dog disease for the most part. In fact, if I have an unvaccinated pit bull that comes in 6 months of age or younger, I'm assuming, if it comes in with diarrhea, I'm assuming it's parvo until otherwise proven. That's usually the presentation I get. It's a young pit bull that's never been vaccinated.
Oh, let me tell you about mine. I had a 1.5-year-old pit bull vaccinated by us at the Humane Society, vomiting diarrhea. He's vaccinated. He's 1.5 years old. What does Dr. Lewis do? She traipses this dog all over the clinic, getting x-rays over here, doing an ultrasound over here. Let's draw blood over here. Yeah, you know where this is going.
Oh, my God.
And the blood machine comes back, and the dog has, like, 500 white blood cells. I'm like, what? So, I was very popular that day because I had literally traipsed this dog like all over this huge hospital. And so then we ran a parvo test because I'm like, guys, this dog has parvo. Don't ask me how. And everybody's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it has to. Either that or like ate a lot of estrogen, which is the other thing that can cause a dog to have like no white blood cells. I was like, come on, estrogen. But no.
Come on, estrogen. Good luck with that.
I was really praying it was. But no, and I don't know if he must have just had a crap immune system or – I don't know, but I have never, yeah. So ever since then, I'm like, guys, it's a 1.5 is still a young dog. You know, it wasn't like a 10-year-old dog. Sure. But that kind of rocked all of our world and all of my texts as they, you know, cursed my name as they bleached the entire x-ray room.
Yeah. I did even worse than that. So same age, about 1.5 years, vaccinated. Okay. Mm-hmm. Similar scenario here. This dog had no diarrhea, though. He was vomiting, hadn't held food down in 4 days, dehydrated, didn't look well, and he's really painful in the abdomen. And so 1.5-year-old pit bull, I asked the folks, is he prone to dietary indiscretion? Would he eat inanimate objects, that kind of dog? Oh, yeah, constantly. So I x-ray, and he's got this distended look to the stomach, like something's stuck there. It's all full of gas, and it's dilated. And so I control his vomiting.
Did you pet the parvo dog?
No, this gets crazy. Okay. It goes beyond crazy. So I run a GI series on this dog, you know, have him swallow the barium, and we time it and all that, and you take the x-rays, and the barium is supposed to move through the gut. And you could like kind of set your clock to a dog's gut. It's right. Going to be this far at this time and this far at this time. 6 hours later, it had not left his stomach. By the next morning, with fluids, right, and on antibiotics, the dog – still had barium in his stomach. Didn't get past that area called the pylorus where we transition from stomach to duodenum. I'm like, there's got to be a foreign body in there. So what do you naturally do? You do an exploratory surgery. I get in there. Stomach's all inflated. His whole gut's in, like, just looks really bad, and I see throughout the entire gut. that there's what's called petechiation, little pinpoint hemorrhages all over it. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Had normal blood work, by the way. Blood work was normal. Yeah.
I was going to judge you for cutting a parvo dog. Okay.
Yeah. I'd run blood work the day before. Okay. Thankfully, thank God this happened before I had a boarding kennel in the back that, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I close the dog up and I'm like, there's no foreign body here. So I'm completely confounded. As the dog's recovering, he starts blowing bloody diarrhea and it has the smell. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Test it. Sure enough, parvo. And so not only did I traipse this dog all over my hospital, I had him in my sterile OR.
God.
Operated.
Oh, God.
Opened up a dog that, you know, did not have an obstruction, but it's one of those judgment calls, you know.
Probably could have made it worse, no offense, but yeah.
Oh, no. No doubt. Well,
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, no doubt. So at this point, I'm like, well, you know, the dog was stable, and I turned to my manager at the time. I'm like, well, heck, the cat's out of the bag, so to speak. You know, he's here. Let's just see it through. It's the last thing I want to do is have a parvo case in here. Normally, we kick him out the door and send him to a facility that is isolation.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just put him in the back of the hospital, put the litter pans of Rocal all around for people to step in, and took every precaution we possibly could. Bleached everything just like you talked about. Can you believe that dog pulled through? Lived happily ever after.
Wow.
After I opened,
but he didn't have the low white blood cells. That might have been what, you know what I mean? Like he had immunity still, so that was probably good.
He did at the time I took the blood work, but then a week later he was anemic as heck, and he did have low white blood cells.
Interesting.
So
okay.
It all manifested after I decided to open him up. You know, it's just craziness. So that's a lesson learned. Wow. You know, it's just one of those hindsight 2020 cases.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I feel so bad then about traipsing my pit bull all over them.
Yeah, I figured that'd make you feel a little bit better. But, you know, parvo, I think the bottom line is it's really preventable. It is very recognizable. If you have I think more on the dog side, because, again, I don't know where these panleukopenia cats are, probably dead, you know. But if you have a dog, a young dog, a puppy or a kitten, no vaccine history, and they have nasty, fetid, blood-tinged diarrhea, get them seen quickly. But like you said, though, you know, whether they live or die, sometimes it feels like it's out of our hands.
Yeah.
Any parting thoughts from your end?
Yeah, and actually one more thing, too, just real quick about you have a puppy, you're doing everything right, you're vaccinating. Do not take that dog to PetSmart or the dog park. Yeah. Or anywhere else, because yes, you're vaccinating and doing everything right. But like I said, remember how their immunity isn't good until they're 4 months old. So I'm sorry, I'm lame, but if you have a friend who has a dog that wants to bring their dog over to play and they're a vaccinated, healthy dog, that's fine. It's going public places where Joe Schmo was, you don't know, and his dog was pooping parvovirus, and it's been 6 months and the virus is still alive, because that can actually happen. Only bleach really kills it. So anyway, a little bit is also limiting exposure to this. The vaccine works too, but when you're in those puppy kitten ages, well, kittens don't travel like, you know, kittens don't go to cat parks. That'd be fun. Anyway,
yeah,
but yeah, so that's my parting thought is, yeah, the vaccine's effective, but we also need to have some common sense, and every vet will tell you, limit exposure. And actually, part of the reason I have, as a house call vet, the reason I have puppies call me is I have owners who like might have had a parvo dog and they're paranoid and they're like, we are not leaving this house. We want the vet to come to us because we won't go to a dirty, contaminated vet clinic and just getting anything there. That's how paranoid, which I get it. And that's why I see a lot of my puppies because I'm like, that's cool because, you know, I'm not going to be bringing it around. I mean, I don't see parvo dogs, you know.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, they could show up to a clinic and there's a doctor opening up a parvo dog right in his OR. Imagine that.
Yeah. Or a doctor traipsing to get through the entire clinic. So, yeah. Hey.
Yeah. It's known to happen. So great topic, though. And who was the name of the lady who sent the email? That's awesome because she inspired us.
Yeah, that was. And you know what? Let me pull it. Lori
or Laura from South Carolina?
I want to say it was Lauren. I know it was South Carolina. I won't give the town. I want to say it was Lauren. Let me get my act together here. Yep, Lauren.
Okay, so Lauren, thank you very much. We like emails, so keep them coming, folks, because sometimes you never know. It could inspire an entire episode.
Yeah, because, I mean, we started with cerebellar hypoplasia, and now we're on dog diarrhea. So you know how we roll. It just goes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we love tangents. Good night, everybody. Nice to talk to you again.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.